class that I'm taking in cultural biology. Nope, cultural anthropology. I know what class I'm taking. But we were talking about like body shaming, body positivity. And one of the things that came up for me in general, because I have breast augmentation, I feel like a lot of people have like a real down opinion on, you know, that how somebody modifies their body. But I have a question, like, what is the difference between modifying my body through cosmetic surgery or modifying my body by covering it in tattoos and piercings?
Or piercings.
Like,
thank you. I was going to say the same thing. Or dyeing your hair.
That's right.
Cutting your, like, any. Well, people can keep their opinions to themselves.
I 100% agree. I think that people should be allowed to do whatever they want with their bodies. If you know, I've had this conversation with you already about like beauty standards in general and where they're rooted, and I think that that is a valid conversation to have. However, do I think it's anybody's business what you choose to do with your body? No. And do I think that life is too short?
Oh, girl.
Like,
yes.
If you want to do something that makes you feel good about yourself and makes you happy, then you should be allowed to do that. You're not hurting anybody else, and there's no reason why anybody should have a comment about what you do to your body. I mean, everybody on this podcast knows that I'm a feminist. I have a feminism podcast, and I do think that the conversation surrounding our beauty standards and where they come from and why they exist or whatever, that why we might want to make the choices that we make. Like, for instance, for myself, I don't like having body hair. I want to shave it all off. You know what I mean? And having that conversation around why that is might be valid, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because body autonomy and is sacred. Your body, your choice, you get to do whatever you want with your body, period.
That's right.
Absolutely. And furthermore, like what I was saying earlier, it's more than where it came from, because that is a valid conversation. I also want to see where it's going.
Agree.
Because I do see people that are taking body autonomy and body image away from male gaze, away from society's gaze. And I feel like we're at the infancy of that. And I want to see where that's going. Where
absolutely.
It's not about those things anymore, and people are doing things to make themselves. I feel like if you're happy, healthy, and you're doing your thing, like,
agree.
Two thumbs
and, yeah.
way
and
up for me.
I totally want to point out, Cass, I'm not saying at all that like anybody necessarily gets an augmentation or any kind of like cosmetic surgery because of the male gaze or because they're trying to please men. I think the larger
conversation
is worth having. But I do think at this point, like, I'm a big makeup enthusiast. I actually like putting on makeup more than Anthony likes me in makeup. Do you know what I mean? Because it's for
me. But you don't do it for Anthony.
Right. Yeah. It's for me. It's a fun thing that actually I share with my girlfriends more than I share with any man, or it's for any man. So
I think of it as an art form almost.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Culture evolves and it changes. Yep. And if you're happy with the way that you look and you're not hurting anybody, it's nobody's business.
Right. Well, it takes me to a broader scope, too. So first and foremost, I just want to say that if we're going to talk about body positivity, my end statement is that it can't exclude anyone or anything. Right.
Sure. Yep.
I just don't think it can. I think if you're going to say body positivity, it has to include everyone.
There we go.
Yeah.
I've held my tongue long enough. We're on. I've got to talk about Jason Colley.
Oh God, you are just like squirming out of your skin right now.
I really am. Okay, so I was talking to Cassie when we first got on before you joined, Keegan, and of course I was like crying because this is the week that I've had. We pretty much came to the conclusion that I got ghosted. So I thought I had a job, and it's been over 3 weeks now since they told me that I'd be contacted by HR. Nobody's contacted me, so I'm pretty sure I got ghosted, which is so funny to go through that with a job as well as having to have gone through that dating. But regardless, The thing that saved me this week from a full-blown depression was this was the very first time in my life that I was in from the beginning.
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay, so let me just address before we get started. So we are pre-recording, and by the time this episode comes out, we are aware that the Jason Collier business will be old news and or have evolved into something completely different because the mm-hmm. internet moves at the speed of light, okay? But at the time we are recording...
I forget, like day four or five. Like, so we're recording. This is Friday. All this noise started, what, Wednesday?
Wednesday.
Yes, I woke up early for us in California.
I wasn't out of bed yet. I woke up. I checked my phone. Somebody had put in the Facebook group, God bless, man, I should look and give that person a shout out because somebody in the Facebook group was like, hey, you guys need to get in on this. It's happening in real time before this thread gets shut down. You need to go check out this thread. And of course, me being the nosy bitch I am, I
vacuuming grass.
I don't have my bonnet off yet. I'm still in bed. I'm like, all right, let's do this. So I go to the thread. I swear to God, I was 15 minutes late for work because I am scrolling. I'm reading every comment.
Yep.
Oh, yep. Do you want to do the honors, Christina, and give everybody who maybe doesn't know?
Okay. I have to assume there might be some people that don't know because for long, long reasons, which we may not get into here, there were people commenting today that were asking what Q was.
Oh, dear.
Because this is that global. They were like, what's Q? And I was like, let me tell you, Jewish space lasers.
Oh, all my God.
Buckle up. Buckle up, Australia. I got you. So, fucking, okay. Jason Collier is a chief of a small town in Stinnett, Texas. He was married to a woman, a lovely woman named Opal, with four kids.
Is.
Well, hopefully was by this point. But anyways, he had two kids from a previous marriage and Opal had two kids. So they're married. And this wonderful badass bitch named Cecily Steinmetz decides that she is going to post a picture of her new fiance. They have been dating for a couple of months. Which is a little moving too fast food, if you're asking me. But, you know, to each his own, I move too fast food in my own relationship, too. So I ain't one to judge. I ain't passing
when
judgment.
When you know, you know.
Unless it's Jason Collier.
And when you know, you know.
But sidebar, this is totally not the point of this. But since we were just talking about makeup and people having all kinds of opinions about, like, I've seen so many men say that, like, makeup changes women's appearance and it's, like, catfishing or whatever. Can we also talk about beard fishing for, like, 5 seconds? Because that man looks totally different with a beard, Jason Collier, than he does without one.
Listen, I'm going to say this, too. And you guys can tell me if I should cut it out or not. I probably will end up cutting it out. But he is the fucking classic guy in his fucking late 30s that was big and lost a bunch of weight and now thinks
he's hot shit.
Dick is fucking gold.
Jeez.
Do you know what I'm talking about? He's like, nobody paid attention to me in high school.
Oh, he's still ain't hot though, I gotta say. He ain't hot.
No, he's not.
He looks better with the beard. He does look better with the beard, but.
But yes, beard. Beard fishing is a thing. It is a thing. That is but you know what? That's a choice that you can make with your body.
Absolutely. I'm not judging. I'm just saying.
It is. It is a thing. So Cecily posts a picture of her fiance and her fucking friend notices that there is a woman on Jason's work, because he works, he's chief of police of this fucking town. Mm-hmm. There's a woman that's liking all these posts and shit, and she's like, who is this?
God bless
bitch,
this friend. You know
who
what?
Who is liking my friend's
this
fiance's
this woman,
posts?
This friend lost her job during COVID.
Yes.
And now
it's me.
She's like,
it's me.
She's like, I have all the time to be spying on my friend's new fiance.
Honey.
I'm like, if that ain't one of you, mm-hmm. I don't know.
100%.
It's me.
So she's like, she looks at this chick's profile and she's like, that's my fucking friend's fiance with this woman and her fucking kids. And so that's when it blows up and Cecily's like, puts it out there on her photo and then goes to the city of Stinnett's page, the entire metropolis of Stinnett, which is 1,400 people, and doesn't recommend the city, reviews the city.
Thumbs down.
And lays out all the tea. And that shit went viral.
It went bananas. So you go to her page where it's like, it, you know, it is a selfie of her and Jason. And you see her post a thing where she's like, well, just found out that he's married. I guess that she had mutual friends with mm-hmm. Opal, the wife, right? Ooh. And so they commented as well. And they were like, yo, you need to check this out. So she made a comment on that post. Rather than taking it down, she made a comment on that post. Then the other girlfriend, who was the one who was liking all his shit in the PD page, the police department yeah. page, she gets on there. Those two, public, back and forth, sharing receipts, sharing screenshots dates. Of text messages, sharing photos. They're sharing timelines. They're like, hey, whenever that photo was taken, he was, you know, whenever he texted you that.
In Seattle.
They're like, he texted you that. He was laying in bed with me in Taos. I was like, oh, my God.
And the coffee makers.
Oh my God. The coffee makers. The fucking memes, you guys.
The memes are, oh God, the internet, man. The internet. Well, it's a blessing and a curse.
Because that's one of the things Cecily showed is that, like, she was, like, a little suspicious of it moving too fast food. And she's like, yo, like, are you married? And he's like, no, that got annulled. And he...
Yeah,
filled Girl. Out like as someone who is doing their own divorce, like you can print out court forms,
yeah,
like from the internet that you fill out and then turn into the courthouse or like whatever. So he had filled out this one sheet annulment paper, which, ladies, you know, like I have filled out,
sir,
hundreds of pieces of paper now to get a quote-unquote easy divorce. And so this one piece of paper that he's filled out and not even tried to forge this bitch's name,
all the handwriting is the same. Exactly, like, it's all the same. Oh,
there's no stamp or seal on it, nothing. It's
nothing.
Just
he's like, yep, it's annulled or whatever. And she's like, suspicious.
But she accepts it. And like, I feel like that's also something to be, there's something to be said about like the trust that you put in people, because, you know, if I liked someone enough, I'd probably be like, okay, well, I trust them not to have gone through the difficulty of like printing something out, and like, they're not going to deceive me to this degree. So I guess it's legit, even though it does look a little suspicious. You know, you rationalize those things.
And this proves my point. This is the entire thesis of our podcast, boiled down to this point, in that, yes, you yourself might get love struck mm-hmm. and might give people the benefit of the doubt, but your fucking best friend won't. Mm-hmm.
Christina, you That's know if right. you had showed us that annulment, we would have been like,
girl.
Dude, the judge that reviewed it gave a statement that said, that's not even the correct number. Of,
yes, the cause number isn't the same, isn't the right thing.
It's like, it's not even close.
Lord, Lord. Like, oh my God. And so then, by the time in the morning that I had gotten through the entire thread, I was like, okay, I'm done with this thread. I was like, I'm going to go to the, I had to get up and get Next some coffee because I'm like, I'm kind of tired. And then I went to the Stinnett Police Department's page. It had already been shut down because Jason Collier was an admin of that page. Mm-hmm. Never. God, I chose the right time to come back to Facebook. I swear to God. Ooh. So he'd shut that page down. And so I couldn't go there. So then everybody went to the City of Stinnett's page, and it just became a meme page. Just everybody posting memes. The internet worked so fast to make all these Jason Collier memes. My God. It was amazing. And then more women came.
I felt like more of a global citizen than I have in that moment. In that one beautiful, shining moment, everyone was united.
Yeah.
It wasn't a fight. There was a day where everyone on the internet had a common cause.
Didn't matter where you were in the political spectrum. Didn't matter what country you were from. People were tagging their location of where they were from. People were creating groups specifically just to call out Jason Collier. What I would not give to be a fly on the wall when he woke up
that morning
and saw the notification.
His phone was hot. His phone started a fire. That's how hot his phone was. That gives me chills because that is instant karma, because what he did is not uncommon. It really isn't. There's just something about why things go viral is very interesting, to bring it back to the cultural anthropology class you talked about earlier. There is a reason, a time, there are certain factors that happen to make a post go viral. Yeah. There's something about when you think about in the United States where we have been for the past few months and even the past four Wednesdays of January, our news cycle, what they have been. Something about this post united us, gave us a common cause, and brought us together. It was something that we needed.
We needed it. Sure did. We needed something to distract us.
Besides Bernie. I mean, Bernie did a good job, too.
Bernie did his best.
The Bernie memes.
But this was something that was, for the most part, divorced from politics. For the most part, I mean. And so it felt different. It hit different. Although I do have to say, even with that, do you guys feel like people from other countries are watching America with just like a glass of wine and a bucket of popcorn? Just like, what the fuck is going on over there? Like, people from Australia are commenting on the City of Stinnett's Facebook page.
It's a little embarrassing, I do have to say. And like, the further that it digs on, because obviously we're day three now to this nonsense, and like, people are digging in and divides are starting to form. So it's already going bad in a way. Politics has entered the equation. Not only that, like, really bad, like, hate and homophobia has entered the fucking conversation, which is like,
because the internet's a blessing and a curse. It giveth and it taketh away. That's how it works. Yeah. You know, but I want to talk about how this motherfucker had time for this. Like, because he had a wife, two fiancés, and like, how many girlfriends?
Eight.
And you got kids? Like, literally,
I'm sorry.
Tired.
Let me correct that. As of right now, what is confirmed is he had a wife. Possibly he still wasn't divorced legally from his first wife.
No.
Two fiancés, Cecily and Christy, and eight girlfriends.
Oh, what?
I don't understand.
And
you guys,
he's like on some kind of like a team that goes to different states when crisis happens.
Oh, yeah. That's why he told them he was on some kind of like special ops special team. Like, that's why he was out of town so much. I'm like, homie. Nah. But I mean, I'm telling you, look, I had cramps today and didn't change out of my pajamas. Like, I don't understand how this man had the energy and time. Like, you could not take a day off. You couldn't be sick. Like,
No.
And the amount of money spent on coffee makers, just like, I can't imagine.
And as somebody that gets a little bit of anxiety when I get notifications in general, be it from Facebook or Instagram or like our text threads. Like I looked away from my phone for a few minutes today. I picked it back up. There were 71 text messages from our group thread. And I was like, what did I miss? I'm like, that motherfucker must always have notifications. He must always have notifications. And that alone gives me anxiety.
The funny thing is, too, though, is that his shit's super recyclable. Like, even the videos that he was like, oh, you know, I'm out on the road, I miss you, that kind of shit. I'm like, he could fucking send that to anybody. He didn't say anybody's name.
He didn't say any name. It's always baby and the, oh, my God, the honey bunny
honey
stuff.
Honey bunny.
Honey bunny.
You know, he didn't even call them all kitten like Armie Hammer or anything. It was so generic. I also love, you know what I also love to see? Is a good fake apology, because he did like an apology video where he was like, he sent it to Cecily, I think, and he's like, I'm just so sorry I let you down. And man, as
that
an actor, I'm like, you could take
that shit.
You could take some classes, my guy, because nobody is buying that shit. Like, you could take some Strasberg, you know, some Stella Adler to try and get yourself emotionally connected, because I'm not buying those sniffles, Jason.
No, not at all. Nah. It's listen, you're going to get found out if you do shit like that. If
you
want to be
not?
Casual, if you want to be casual, be casual. Be on the front, up and up with it. There are plenty of people that are at that stage in their life. That's what they want. So do that. There's no shame in fucking getting your dick wet or fucking dick hopping. Whatever. Do you.
But don't
be
married
honest.
To someone.
Exactly.
Or don't be married to someone who's not in on it. Like,
right.
There are plenty
that's,
of open marriages, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I don't think
correct.
Opal signed up for that. Because we didn't even address the fact that, like, he's like, I'm an ordained minister. I'm a godly man. Like, all those things. And he's like, what was
Dear
the deal
Barbara.
With profanity, too, where he's just like, I just...
yeah, he can't accept profanity. And, yeah, it's just like the hypocrisy. We've talked about this before. It's like a lot of times, you know, there's people that get on, you know, people in power that get caught in some sort of like scandal or whatever. And it turns into gay bashing when it's not about that. It's about
the
hypocrisy.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we get. And I'm like, I'm not bashing Jason's faith or whatever when I talk shit about him. I'm bashing his hypocrisy.
Right. I'm not bashing his faith. I'm not bashing the fact that he's sleeping with a bunch of different people. That's not the problem. The problem is you're lying to a bunch of different people, and you're acting like you're better than other people, and you're trying to enforce rules on other people that you don't abide by yourself. Because he also had a bunch of texts where he was being like super jealous and stuff, and it's like, are you serious?
Yeah,
my guy,
with fucking 2 fiancés and 8 girlfriends, and oh my god. Yeah, so I jumped down the rabbit hole. I may have joined a whole bunch of different groups.
Oh man.
My favorite being right now, Christy Schaefer and Netflix documentary. It's so bad.
Is it cute? Christy with a Q?
It is It is. And let me tell you, I've had so much joy this week explaining what QAnon is to people from other countries. We're like, why is everybody keep spelling it with a Q? And I'm like, blow on my fingers and just like, type.
Oh, you know what, Christina, and you can feel free to leave this in or cut it out, but like, this has got to be a fun week for you, because if this wasn't the most eat the rich of weeks of all time.
Girl.
Nom, 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 nom.
Ready?
Okay. So next time, I'm going to put this out there. Like, we don't have a shit ton of listeners, but I know at least one of our listeners had to be in on that GameStop stuff. Shoot somebody a text. I got fucking money to spare to eat the rich.
Absolutely.
I'm in on it with you. I'm
absolutely
there.
Absolutely, you know.
How mad? How mad was my ass? I was outside smoking and some girl was on her phone talking real loud, walking her dog. And she's like, how is my stock doing? This was literally before it all came up. And she was like, and talking about putting stock in some, and it wasn't GameStop, but it was like, I don't even remember, but it was like
AMC or something.
Yes, AMC. How's my AMC stock doing or something like that? And I was like, what the fuck is she talking about? And then I was like, went inside and checked my stocks because that's what I do. But then, and then the next morning, it was talking about, I was like, God damn, I should have jumped on that AMC shit.
Let me tell you, this is not a political podcast. It never has been. Of course, we three are very political people. And we definitely have opinions. We tend to leave these off the podcast. I will say that if something happens with regulations for the stock market to protect those hedge fund fucks before we get a stimulus check or COVID relief, I'm fucking pissed. And I'll leave that in on the podcast because that's something you should be fucking pissed about, is that they're going to protect those people that have been gaming the system. And then they got pissed off that we learned how to game the system before they even try to help. Oh, girls, I'm fired
Christina, I have a serious question for you. Do you like your rich with just like a little butter, salt,
little
and pepper?
Or
do
some
you
garlic.
Prefer like a marinade?
A red sauce.
A red sauce. Okay. You like to eat your rich with a red sauce. Got
Girl,
it.
Girl, let me tell you, Anthony sent me a Instagram thread that was pictures of people on Wall Street during Occupy Wall Street in 2008, who were like drinking champagne and mocking the people who were protesting. And I'm like, man, it's amazing that we haven't had a situation.
people are out of work, but myself,
they
and
mad,
have
and
nothing
they got time.
Else to do.
Yep.
You don't think I can't get myself somewhere to make a fucking stink? I got enough money for cardboard and a Sharpie. I can make a sign and fucking yell plenty loud. My voice is loud. And I'm telling you, this shit is not right. Like, I love the fact. I fucking Wall Street bets all day. Go get it. But, like, if they try to do this shit and they don't address the real problems that we have in this country and instead try to protect hedge fund billionaires, there's a fucking problem. And everybody should be agreed on that. Whether you're Democrat, Republican, whatever, that is a fucking problem.
It's time to unite, you guys. It's time to unite because we, as everybody who's not the 1%, have a lot more in common than we don't have in common. I'll tell you that much. Hey,
guys, this is not a dating advice podcast, but, you know, if you want to put on your fucking profile that you have GameStop stock, if I was single, I'd swipe on that all day.
You're like solely for the conversation. Even
I got
like
that GameStop, I got that AMC. I'm hitting up Blockbuster next. I'd be like, ooh, hey.
They're all like, sell.
I look though. I gotta tell you, man. Nothing has made me feel more stupid than trying to figure out what the fuck happened. Like, I was like, there's something that happens in my brain when people start talking about like finances where it goes immediately to like monkeys playing cymbals. Like, I can't like I can't comprehend it at all. So like, someone explained it to me as the plot of The Producers, and then it made way more sense, where it was just like they were betting on it being a flop, and then it was a hit, and then they got screwed.
Like, right, basically. Because they have to buy back those stocks, and they're betting on buying back those stocks at $1 instead of $5.
So now they have to pay out on these stocks at
$500. At $500.
That's right.
Instead of $1. And so they're
so both of those things exist. Exactly.
Billions, which is mwah. And Lute, I've watched interviews with very angry old white men.
I was about to ask
Fox
you
News.
If you were just like drinking wine and watching billionaires cry on TV, because that's a thing that's happening right now.
Anyways, this is My Worst Date Podcast. I'm Christina.
I'm Keegan.
I'm Cassie.
Well, who should we fuck, marry, kill this week? We could do famous billionaires. Warren Buffett.
Yeah, I mentioned, I said that we could do billionaires.
Bill Gates. and like.
No, we did Elon Musk for Insufferable.
Yeah.
He still applies, like, but we've never done Bezos.
Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos.
We did do Bezos.
No, we didn't. We talked about it, but it never aired.
Oh, got it.
Okay. All right. Fine.
Well, I want to do, what's his name? Gates. I want to do Bill Gates.
Yeah. That's what I said. Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos.
Okay.
Okay.
Fuck, marry, kill. Those three.
Christina, this is going to be the hardest for you, I think.
I don't know. Really, this does not feel good to me.
How do you not say kill, kill?
This doesn't feel good to me at all.
All right. Okay. I'm going to marry Bill Gates. I think he does the most good with his money.
Yes. Yeah. He does. Like, look, he does, but the bar is set low. And like the thing is, I appreciate that Bill Gates does what he does with his money, but I'm like, if you have that much money, I still feel like it's not enough. But
didn't
that's
Warren
me.
Buffett start that pledge? Did you hear about that? There's a pledge that's going around to all the uber billionaires that they should get rid of all their wealth before they die.
Oh,
like for
that.
Good causes. I'm fairly certain Warren Buffett is the one that like started that. That there's a pledge where he's like, you can't fucking take it with you. Do the most good you can while you're still alive. I know motherfuckers in Omaha. Listen, I'm not doing an A&E biography on these three people. Right. So don't come at me. I know what I know about these people, and I don't.
Warren Buffett is also 90 years old. Like,
yeah,
it's amazing that you came out with this now, honey. You're 90. You couldn't have said this shit when you were 50.
Can you imagine what you could get for $1 billion in Omaha?
He is the fourth wealthiest person in the world. Warren Buffett is as of December of 2020.
Okay, what are the other ones?
I'm looking to see if that pledge is true. He's a notable philanthropist, having pledged to give away 99% of his fortune to philanthropic causes, primarily via the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So he founded the Giving Pledge in 2009 with Bill Gates, whereby billionaires pledge to give away at least half their fortune.
I know what I'm going to do. Okay. So. I'm going to marry Warren Buffett. He's 90.
I was just going to say.
Yeah.
He's that's giving what I know, away his I wealth. I yep. like it. I dig it. Also, he's 90. Okay. Like, you
You're
know,
gonna soon. Fuck Bill Gates.
I'm going to fuck Bill Gates.
Yep.
I'm going to fuck. Yep. You know what? I'm going to fuck Bill and Melinda Gates. At the same
there
time,
go.
Let's get it, okay? Both of them, because I think Bill Gates would be the most fun to hang out with, even though I definitely think he's a socks and sandal wearing motherfucker, like for sure.
In bed, yeah. While he fucks you,
he keeps his knee high socks
on. He's fucking you in Birkenstocks. Mm-hmm. No,
100%. Yes.
Tevos, those sandals. He's fucking you in Tevos.
Yeah, he keeps his glasses on too. He's gonna have to keep pushing them up the whole time. Yes. You know, it's fine. Okay, like I think that's fine. And then I'm gonna kill Jeff Bezos for I feel like obvious reasons. The man is listening to me right now, but he definitely has the dead eyes of a shark, and I don't want any of that anywhere near me at any time. So, them's my answers.
I'm with you.
Same.
I'm with you 1,000%. Warren Buffett would probably he'd be a pleasant person to be married with. You'd eat some soup together.
And talk or not talk for hours.
That's right. That's right, dude. And, you know, I feel like it'd be real chill. I'd be left to my own devices most of the time. He goes to bed at 7:30 p.m. It's all right, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm happy with that answer.
I am too.
I'm in.
I like it. You guys want to take five and come back with stories?
Yes.
And we're back. All right, Christina, kick us off.
Okay. So mine is pretty short and it will make you furious. So
fun.
There we go. So I matched with this guy on Tinder solely for a hookup. 2 weeks go by and we are both finally free to link up. I get to his apartment one night around 3:15 a.m.
I mean, goals. You got a goal. You had a goal in mind.
But also, am I just old, or maybe I've been out of the dating scene for too long, but I'm like, I'm not trying to go literally anywhere at 3 in the morning.
Listen, you guys know the vast majority of my dates started after 10 p.m. on a fucking weeknight. That's what was up.
Yeah, that's that not 42-year-old me, but 22-year-old me.
Sure. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
3:30. Knock, knock, knock.
I will say,
bars is closed.
I am fucking Cinderella, and I did not leave my house after midnight. That is something that I was just like, I'm too old for this shit.
I suppose if you put it into, like, I can't even comprehend being out and going to bars anymore because it's been so long. But I suppose if you put it into the context of, like, you were already out. And you got that you up text when you're already dressed to be at the bar at 2 a.m., then I'd be like, all right, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Fine.
So I get to his apartment around 3:15 a.m., and I'm greeted by his German Shepherd who literally would not stop jumping on me, and he did absolutely nothing to stop it. I love dogs, so I didn't mind too much, but, like, it was kind of annoying. Anyways, we go into his room. An Impractical Jokers is playing on the TV. Red flag number one. I don't know that show. Do you guys know that show? Impractical Jokers?
Yeah, I think it's just kind of just like a dumb guy's prank show kind of thing.
Well, that's good because he proceeds to tell me this is the best show ever.
Oh, God.
We finally start making out and getting down to business. This is when things get weird. He starts mimicking female moans in my ear while fingering me with one hand and beating off with the other.
Huh. Huh.
Why?
That's different.
Extremely turned off by this, I go to top to start fucking him, and he literally tells me no, tosses me off him, and literally, like, proceeds to aggressively finger the fuck out of me. Then he moans loudly.
We have nothing to say.
I feel like we've addressed aggressive fingering on this podcast before. It doesn't end well in general. I really do need context for how old they are, because
This feels young. If you're getting out of bed at 3:15 a.m., you are under 30 years old. I'm sorry. I will stake my life on this.
You're getting out of bed at 3 a.m. to be fingered.
Mm-mm. Badly. I am not.
Badly. Badly. Mm. Yeah. No, this is an under 30 story for real. He then moans loudly and releases himself all over the bed sheets on purpose.
He gave his bed a Victoria sandwich.
Them some Bridgerton vibes, for real.
He said, yeet.
Oh, my God. He's like, lady, whistle down. After that, he lays back down next to me and smiles and says, wasn't that the best sex of your life?
Oh, sir, you don't know what sex is.
Sex is not your fingers. No. She goes, sir, are you kidding me? You did not even penetrate me once with your member.
Oh, this is Bridgerton.
Instead of answering, I just looked over and made eye contact with the German Shepherd who was sitting in the corner of the room.
You guys, I love animals. I do not want them in the room with me at all, ever.
No.
This during.
Gives
no.
me
ever.
Fucking Busy Bee vibes from Best Show.
Oh, no.
Fuck in front of that Weimaraner.
Oh no.
Oh no.
I'm the same. I don't want to fuck in front of animals.
Never.
it gives me weird vibes.
My own animals get kicked out. I'm like, oh, hell yes. You don't need to be
Chuck
in
doesn't
here.
Get to be in the room. That's no, no, sir.
After that, I told him I had to go because I had class in the morning and I ran out of the apartment. I still can't get over how uncomfortable that whole experience was. He still sends me daily selfie snaps and it literally gives me the ick.
Daily.
Oh, daily, sir.
I don't like that.
No. No.
All right. My story. So I got my story from Reddit. It says, I'm relatively new to dating, seeing as I got into a relationship pretty young, and now I'm single for the first time in years. It's been about a year or so, decided to meet some people. This was my first, quote, first date ever. God, I don't know how you guys do it. So I matched on Tinder. What else? Got chatting. He seemed quite nice. Arranged to meet up for a drink later that week. I've moved to the city, so I asked him to show me some nice pubs. I figure seeing as it's a pub and it's a Thursday evening, it's not a massive deal. So I just wear a skirt, t-shirt, and trainers. He doesn't shut up about it because he wore a blazer. Makes a massive deal about me wearing trainers.
You're like, just going to like a pub. And I've also seen like the cutest outfits. With trainers or sneakers or whatever you call it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's weird. And also, hey, typically it goes the other way around. So if once in a while.
Totally.
The man is more overdressed, like, hey.
I feel like that's super appropriately dressed for the situation. A Thursday evening. You're wearing a skirt.
Right. Like, you want me to wear stilettos?
Like, it sounds cute to me. Yeah. Like, honestly. Anyway, then things got very odd. I get quite bad breakouts and was having one that day. It isn't something I'm particularly concerned by, but I do wear makeup to cover a partially bad day. So he just looked at me halfway through and said, quote, you've got really bad acne, haven't you?
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Triggered.
Okay, mm-hmm. I'm very triggered mm-hmm. by this because I got lucky in my teens and didn't have to deal with acne until my adults. So my acne started in my 20s, and I've tried everything with it, and it's been an ongoing struggle, and it's just like. I feel like that's such a rude thing to say. I'm so mad right now. Yeah. I'm
well,
so mad
you know,
right now.
To bring it back to body confidence, which is something we were talking about in the beginning of the episode, skin confidence is part of body confidence. We have to start mm-hmm. allowing skin acceptance as well and allowing skin to look like skin because, like, mm-hmm. listen, it's not normal. It's very rare for people to have like perfect, flawless skin. Everybody has
no pores.
Everybody has breakouts.
Acne has nothing to do with someone being unclean.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Or it's, oh, this is
I have same because I get acne. Mm. I get breakouts. You know, I scar.
Well, because we're human.
Yeah.
You're saying because we're human, we get like zits every once in a while and we get breakouts and people get acne. Oh, it's shocking.
Ugh.
Jesus. I was sort of stunned because it's not something people have generally pointed out to me. I tried to laugh it off and change the subject. He started telling me how aggressive I was and then said I was a, quote, fiery redhead and that he loves redheads with a temper.
Oh, go fuck yourself.
I was
very
confused at this point as I wasn't being aggressive at all. So just asked if he had a problem. He said no, just increasing the sexual tension. The man thought pointing out how spotty I was making good sexual tension. Okay, the fuck? At this point, I start yawning and saying how tired I am. And he's like, yeah, okay, let's go back to yours. I try to make excuses. I'm really not into this.
Wasn't an invitation.
Yeah, right. And don't want him to come back with me. He keeps trying, won't take no for an answer. I try every trick in the book. I have to work tomorrow. I'm not feeling great. I'm really tired. I'm on my period, et cetera, et cetera. He says, we can just put a towel down. No, oh. We can't, mate. At this point, He's getting sort of agitated and pacing and saying, why won't you let me come back with you? I say, pick any reason from the number from above. He says, what I think is that you've got a guy there and want to get rid of me. This was completely out of the blue.
At this
random.
Point, I'd be apparently, like, yep, that's it. That's it.
Apparently, I have some guy waiting for me at home. I sort of noped out, but not before saying, what does it matter if I do? This is the first time we've met. We're single people. Why would that be your first conclusion? He messages me later, apologizing, saying he had been cheated on in the past, and that he gets really jealous really easily. I say that would make sense if I was your girlfriend, but I'm not. This was our first date. Basically, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, no, she lucked out. That's a whole bag of nopes right there in a hand. Like, she tried to tell him no in the nicest way possible, like 15 times.
Yes.
He wouldn't actually like hear anything until like he got some idea in his head that there would be a guy there, which then makes it
a problem.
No.
I mean,
no,
here's,
I have so
here's
much
my
no
question.
On that.
Like, why push so hard to want to be with somebody who very clearly doesn't want to be with you? Like, why would you do that? I wouldn't do that, I don't think. You know, like, I wouldn't, even if I really liked somebody or thought there was a connection, if they were obviously, like, not about it, why would you want to be there? I don't want to feel like anybody's, like, burden.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. At the end, that's the exact same question I had to ask myself a couple of times that I had been ghosted. It was like, why do you care so much, or why would you want somebody so much that obviously isn't invested in you?
Yeah.
Like, you have to just let that go. So,
yeah. 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 100%. Okay. I was 45 when my wife of 15 years and I split up. It was mutual and we remained cordial, but it was still a difficult and painful experience. Once I had moved out and everything had settled, it was actually my ex-wife who encouraged me to get back into the dating pool. Though in hindsight, she wasn't doing so herself, so maybe I should have listened. Maybe I shouldn't have listened, sorry. At first, I was hesitant to get on the apps, but I found that lurking at bars as a middle-aged man looking to meet new people was not a good look, so I decided to jump in. Before long, I had matched with a 30-year-old woman on Tinder. 30 was the bottom of my age range. Truth be told, I was looking to meet someone a little closer to my age, but she seemed mature and we seemed to hit it off. After chatting for a few days, we decided to meet up. I took her to one of my favorite restaurants, not too fancy, but not a casual chain restaurant either. She was beautiful in person and the date went well, even though there were a few red flags. For instance, she brought up her ex more than once in a seriously unflattering way and, quote, joked about what she would do if she ever saw him again. Still,
I don't like that.
we've said it before, like, just don't bring up your ex on a first date.
It's
just
not
don't
necessary.
Do it.
No.
Still, I laughed it off. She was gorgeous, young, and vibrant, and to be honest, I was flattered that she even wanted to be in my company. We continued dating for a few months, and as time went on, it became clear that we just weren't right for each other. When I brought her around my friends, she would be on her phone the entire time, almost completely ignoring everyone around us, and then push me to leave events early because she was bored. When she had too much to drink, she would again bring up her ex and go on and on about what an asshole he was and how she wanted to key his car, etc.
Oh, girl.
I decided to end things.
Yeah, it's probably for the best.
I took her out to a coffee shop, thinking it was appropriate to do it in person, and broke the news. I expected her to be upset, to cry, or throw some kind of fit, but she just stared at me quietly. We sat in silence for a full 10 seconds, and when she spoke, it was about something completely unrelated.
Were you here?
I think she asked me if I had seen something that had been on the news. She didn't even acknowledge that I had just ended our relationship. She acted like it didn't even happen. It was the most bizarre thing I'd ever experienced.
She's like, if I don't acknowledge it, it didn't happen.
Just go away. I was dumbfounded. I asked if she had heard me, and she just said, yes, I heard you. So I asked, so you're okay? She just replied, oh, yes, and took a sip of her coffee. It was unnerving.
She's like, TBH, I didn't even know we were dating.
Exactly.
That night, her reaction was really bothering me. I texted to see if she was okay, and she responded that she was fine and would talk to me soon. Weird, but okay. I went to sleep. The next day, I wake up to my doorbell ringing at 7:30 a.m. It was her in workout gear asking if I was ready for our hike. Our what? Then I remembered that I had made plans with her before the breakup. I tried gently telling her that we were broken up. She just responded, no, we're not.
Oh, shit.
Wait, I don't know if I love this girl or am disturbed by
They're
her.
They're married now.
That's how this is going to end.
I tried arguing with her. I reminded her of the previous day's conversation, and she just said, yes, I heard you, but I never agreed to that, so we're not broken up.
Amazing.
If you're thinking about that episode of Seinfeld, yes, it was like that. So there's an episode of Seinfeld where that happens to George, where he like goes to break up with a woman and she's like, no. And he doesn't know what to do, so they just keep dating. I didn't know what to do. How does one react in a situation like this? I told her that I thought it was best if she left, and she lost it, started yelling and screaming about how much of a dick I was. It was scary. Luckily, I hadn't let her in yet, so I closed the door and locked it. She started pounding on the door, saying that she'd ruined my life and how dare I do this to her after she was willing to give me a second chance.
What?
I figured I'd wait her out, but this went on for 45 minutes.
Dude, 911.
Finally, things went quiet. I was surprised one of my neighbors hadn't called the cops, to be honest. I gave it another half hour before peeking through the curtains. I didn't see her. I breathed a sigh of relief and went about my day. When I left my house later that morning, I was horrified. Not only had she TP'd my house, yes, like we were in seventh grade, but she had also used shaving cream to write liar in huge letters on my car in the driveway.
Oh my God, is she like fucking worships Carrie Underwood or something?
To be honest, at least it was shaving cream and not like exactly. She hadn't actually keyed his car, you know?
True.
I'd never experienced anything like this in my life. I called some friends to come over and help me clean up the mess. They stayed with me that day, and one even stayed the night to make sure she didn't show back up. She never did, though I did get a text from her the following week. Quote, I thought we had something special. Can we try again? It said.
No. You wrote in my yard with shaving cream. Jesus. So you had to go somewhere and buy it.
That's exactly right. She went somewhere and got toilet paper and shaving cream and came back.
And the whole time in her head is thinking, this is still a good idea. This is still a good idea. This is still a good idea. No. It's not.
Needless to
say, call your friend.
Right. Maybe get a second opinion is all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Needless to say, I blocked her. Thankfully, she never showed back up and I never heard from her again. My ex-wife had a good laugh and eventually ended up helping me curate my online dating profiles to weed out the crazies. I met my current long-term non-insane girlfriend on Tinder a few months later.
Oh, God. That's good. That's good.
Oh wow.
Jesus.
Well, are you guys ready for Crazy in Love?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So obviously I was very inspired by the drama this week with Jason Collier. So I feel like that influenced my crazy in love decision this week. And so I got a story from Historical Crime Detective. It's a blog that I think we've all gone to.
I've by never Jason been there.
Lucky Monroe.
But I love the sound of that.
Exactly. And there's a really great Medium article by Heather Monroe. And I'm going to tell you guys the crazy in love story of Arthur Leroy Antoine.
Okay.
Okay.
I actually, and this is funny because we've all talked about our different ways of doing crazy in love. So this week, Keegan, I decided to try and do it your way, where I actually typed out like I was an author on a Word document, this crazy in love. So I'm going to dive right in and see what this is like. But I'm trying it Keegan's way this time instead of my own psychopath notes.
Oh, I'm excited.
Used to tell crazy in loves. Okay. So Ada Ruth Rogers was born in 1897 in a small town in Minnesota to a loving farming family. She was charming with a sweet disposition, and a fellow farmer boy fell head over heels for her.
This sounds like a romance novel, and I am here for it.
Farm boy, fetch me that pail.
As you wish.
Arthur Leroy Antoine asked for her hand, and they were married in January of 1916. So she was only like 18 years old. Arthur was adventurous and ambitious, constantly seeking to improve their situation. They went out west to seek opportunity, and soon they had two baby boys in tow. It seemed that no matter what the job or the city was, it was never good enough. So Ada was used to uprooting and moving constantly. But as she and the boys grew older, Ada grew weary of the constant changes with no roots. In 1927, she used her own money to put a down payment on a grocery store in Oakland, California.
Okay. Yeah, girl.
Determined to stay put, she's like, you know what? Like almost 30 now. I'm done with fucking moving. We've all moved several times over our lives. Mm-hmm. It fucking sucks. Mm-hmm. I bet it sucked more in the early 1900s. Oh, God.
Amen. So, you're having to crank up that car to go from place to place. No, thank you. That doesn't sound like
How
fun.
How are you going to get a fucking, you know, couch on the back of like Henry Ford's first automobile?
T-model or whatever.
Monty.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't have corrected you. Now I sound like I'm 80.
Oh, you made a Model T.
No, but you're right. You're right.
But Arthur and his wanderlust had other ideas. He managed to find a job in Campo Seco, California as an auto mechanic, which was 90 miles away from his family.
Dude, what? Pause. Why? Like, you can't find a job as an auto mechanic in Oakland?
Thank you.
Exactly. No, he was just constantly the type of person that, like Ada was like, he had good jobs everywhere he went, everywhere. Okay. And was
Sir,
still
you're
just
a
like
serial
nope.
killer and running from the law. What is
happening? He's a Jason Collier and so has much? A wife in every city. That's what's happening right now. Like he's like, I don't want to be by Ada too long.
Deuces. It reminds me of that dude, the Lover's Lane killer. And he used to move his family all over the country. And his daughter is the one who turned him in. And they ended up in Ohio.
Oh, yes.
The serial killer guy.
And there was that whole documentary the podcast about that. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he managed to find this job in Campo Seco, California as an auto mechanic 90 miles away from his family. He decided to live there instead of with his family.
Of course he did.
Because he didn't want to make the commute.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? He can't wear his ring to work. You know why? He's going to get caught in all that sheenery.
You know, he just loves his ring so much. He doesn't want it to get all scratched up while he's working on cars. It's totally reasonable.
It's completely reasonable.
You guys are giving the best excuses ever. He also had another reason to stay in Campo Seco, and that was his boss's 18-year-old beautiful daughter,
dumb fuck.
Lila. Stovall.
You're fucking your boss's daughter while cheating on your wife, you absolute idiot.
18.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back in Oakland, Ada was actually doing really well. Her neighbors and customers found her polite and likable, but many assumed she was widowed since they never saw her husband, and it was a rumor she really resented. They felt sorry for her and asked her if she would be alone on Christmas, to which she had no idea. I mean, they didn't have cell phones at that point. He wasn't texting her saying, like, yeah, I'll be home or whatever. She just, like, wouldn't hear from him for stretches at a time. Cool. So, surprisingly, he did actually show up for the holiday, but only briefly before he made the trip back to work.
But you got to work on Christmas? Really, work.
Thank
sir?
You.
Like, your boss is making you come in? Go fuck yourself.
People are taking their cars in to get them fixed on Christmas. Like, no, no.
No.
But he promised to return for their 12th wedding anniversary in a few weeks on January 12th. And return he did to ask for a divorce. He had proposed to Lila just 2 days prior. Ada was not in the mood for that noise on their fucking anniversary.
On their anniversary. The balls on this man. The balls.
He's like, to celebrate our union, I would like to end it immediately, if
he's
not
like,
sooner.
Here's your heart-shaped box of chocolates. And also,
with a note,
a divorce, please.
And also, I am in love with an 18-year-old. So, and she would not agree to a divorce or separation. Her boys remember her crying that night as she tucked them in. And the next morning, they awoke to their father cooking a large breakfast over a roaring fire.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. I do not want to eat my mom. Do not make me eat my mom. Do not make me eat my mom.
Mommy left us for another man, he said.
No, no.
But I'll be back in a few days with a new mommy.
No, you won't.
Please don't.
And then he sent them off to school.
No.
And set back to Campo Seco to collect his young bride.
No.
Okay, so now you can live in Oakland, you piece of shit. Now it's not a problem. Okay.
These kids are both under 10, and it is the early, like, 1900s. So keep that in mind. This is like 1920 something. And these are kids under 10. 4 days later, he returned.
So he just left them alone for four days. He's like, figure it out.
You're fine. You got some leftover mom meat. I mean, meat in the fridge.
Oh, no.
4 days later, he returned with Lila. The young boys liked her all right, but these neighbors were a bit suspicious.
You think? They're like, where the fuck is Ada?
They're like,
Ada.
Sorry. I wanted to buy some cilantro. She's the grocer. Where the fuck is she? They had questions. Like, one, how could the marriage be legal if his wife just left a few days earlier? Mm-hmm. Two, where did she go? No one had ever seen a man around. So neighbor Elizabeth Kraft, who was that bitch, confronted him straight up and said, I may be putting my foot into it, but a lot of neighbors say that you did away with your wife.
Oh, I fucking love some real talk. I really do. I really do.
She didn't even come half-ass at all.
She's
like,
look,
excuse me.
This is what's going on. I love
some
a nosy neighbor.
Are saying, I'm not one of them, but I'm one of them. And they're saying.
She's like, not even vacuuming the grass.
No.
She's up there.
She
like,
went up there bold as day,
fate.
Knocked on the door. She's like, bang, bang, bang. Listen, buddy.
Why'd you kill your wife?
Where's she
Inquiring
at, though?
Inquiring minds need
Where's
to
she
know.
At, though?
Oh, no.
She says, I think it's up to you to give us some suggestions or information that may help us clear up the situation, which is an old-timey way of saying,
yep.
You better give us the deets.
Oh, I
right
love
now.
It. That's amazing. I love her.
Oh, this girl.
Oh, my gosh. So Arthur only laughed off the concerns as gossip, but Lila, his new bride, did not. Before their marriage, Arthur had told Lila he was widowed. And she didn't understand why he told her that instead of what he was telling everybody else. That Ada had run off with another man.
Motherfucker, at least keep your story straight.
She decided to do some snooping. So she snoops, she's talking to the sons, and she's looking through their house, and she's like, okay, Ada has a brand new curling iron here and some money in a teapot. And she's like, puts two and two together, and this curling iron is what seals the deal. She's like, she would not have left this brand new curling iron.
She's like, what is like, it, 1927? She's like, you need those curls.
She's got to
have those finger waves.
And a curling iron back then. I mean,
it was brand new. She's like, no.
And if you were going to run off, you wouldn't leave your teapot money for sure. You need that.
Exactly. So she questions him and he explodes on her. She's like, he's like, why are you always questioning me about Ada? Like, leave off of it.
He's like, I fed her to my kids, okay?
Enough already. So she gets scared and she goes to her brother, Floyd. And she's like, I don't know. The neighbors are gossiping all this stuff. And Floyd is like, listens to all this stuff that she's discovered. And he gets fucking pissed because what he thinks is that Arthur is just a dirty man who tricked his sister into an illegal marriage.
It tracks.
He's like, you've made my sister a bigamist. He doesn't confront Arthur, but he's like immediately on the train, choo-choo to the DA. He's going, he's like, this is bigamy.
You know,
this
and I appreciate cool. that. He bypassed, you know, he could have gone straight to Arthur, but he was like, you know what? Let's just skip all that drama. Go straight to the authorities.
Police. So he goes to them and the police are like, shady story. Okay, we don't know this dude. So they're going to pick him up for questioning. But they actually do one smart thing before they do that. And that is that they canvass the neighborhood and get all the goss, all the tea before they do.
That one neighbor is like, hi, come here first. She's like, I got notes.
She comes to knock on their window. She's like, hey, are you guys here about the murder? Or
she's like, I've been keeping a diary. Hold on one sec.
Let me get my old-timey receipts. Here we go. So when they do pick him up, he tries to like brush it off as just gossip or whatever, but they're like, no, this is just too weird. So try to explain this stuff. And so he just gave them all shoulders saying like, I don't know any of this stuff. But when they finally push him, he admits that his wife, yes, was dead, but he's too ashamed. He's too ashamed about it because
he did it.
He had told his wife that he wanted a divorce, and she was so distraught at the thought of losing him that she immediately ran to a bridge and threw herself into the river.
And then cooked herself up for breakfast and fed it to the boys.
And the police were like, well, that sounds legit. I guess we're done here. Bye.
Yeah. Police actually bought that for a second and then started to drag the river for her body. And when they couldn't find it, they went to him again. And his reply was, that's strange. Keep looking. I know she's in there.
Just keep digging.
And meanwhile, they're wasting how many like city resources on like doing this shit? They're like, yeah. That sounds legit.
It was such a weird reply to them. And the way that he said it, it just like didn't stick right with them.
No,
so they
that's
did,
weird.
They did keep looking. But at last, when they couldn't find anything in the river, then they finally decided to search his home. And when they did, they were shocked to find that the bedroom was completely covered in like half scrubbed blood stains. Like
half scrubbed.
Sir.
So he couldn't even be like he didn't even care enough to like scrub the blood completely out.
Well, he doesn't know how to clean. That's what he has a wife for.
It was Keegan. It was everywhere and they were like, okay. So then with that evidence, they were able to go to the DA. The DA was like, dig up his fucking yard, his house, like everything. They dug up his yard where they found a mattress completely saturated in blood. And he was just like, I don't know how that got there. That
how must weird. Have
been there when I moved. And so police are kind of stuck. They don't have a body. They have a story that's believable at the time. That a man fell in love with a younger woman and the older woman was so distraught that she killed herself over it. And there's no body, there's no evidence to prove otherwise. So they're just like, we don't know what to do. So Lila, the 18-year-old who this whole time has just been like, I'm just getting more and more suspicious. Like all this stuff is like, leave it to me, boys. And this is the 1920s. So she's like, all right, I'll get ya. She goes in to the interrogation room. She sidles on up to Arthur and she's like, Arthur, I pledge my undying love to you. I just need to hear it from your lips. Tell me the truth. I'm always here for you. I love you so much. Like, unburden your soul and we can be together forever. And he's like, that's all I need to hear.
Oh.
And then he tells her that he had waited until Ada cried herself to sleep that night and then hit her in the head with a hammer 3 times. He then locked the bedroom door and spent the entire night separating the flesh from her bones and stuffing it into 2 gunny sacks,
nope.
which he then sewed shut.
No.
He used a saw and a hatchet to break her bones into small pieces and put them into the stove box. And in the morning, he cooked his son's breakfast with that roaring fire. And he took the gunny sacks and yeeted them into the river. He then went back, did a half-ass scrub of the bedroom, and then was off to collect his new bride. So you see, Arthur said, your brother was all wrong when he called me a bigamist.
Oh, my God.
Okay. There it is. There's the worry. Oh, man.
Lila, who must have been silently screaming this like, whole time.
Okay. Thanks, sweetheart. Goodbye.
Was absolutely disgusted and relayed the confession exactly to the police, adding that she couldn't wait to get a divorce from this human beast. Arthur was then put on trial and sentenced to life on May 27th, 1928. The jury was split on death due to the fact that the police at this point had still not been able to find a body. Just a few days after his sentence, however, the sacks were found too late to change the sentence from life to death.
Ugh.
Now, he was a model prisoner at San Quentin.
Do not say it.
Now, one of his sons, Roland, had completely disowned him after his mother's death. But his younger son, Kenneth, couldn't quite, you know, it's a complicated thing.
Is it?
When you're, I can't imagine what that's like when a parent kills another parent or whatever. But his son, Kenneth, kept in contact with him, occasionally visiting him in prison. He was such a good prisoner that the warden of San Quentin said that he could get out in 1943 if he could prove he had a secure job waiting for him.
Because the job's the issue here. Making sure he's employed is the concern.
He talked to Kenneth and he's like, listen, Kenneth, I have $1,500 in savings. That's my entire life savings. Take this, buy a business, any business, and you run it until I get out of jail. and then we'll run it together. And his son, Kenneth's like, sounds like a good idea, Pops. I love it. You are an entrepreneur. Down for it. And then he never hears from his son again.
Yeah. That's the happiest ending that that could have been. He's just like, ever. Deuces, Pops. Bye.
Just wait. So Arthur is furious. He is madder than he's ever been in his life. He's been betrayed. He is just fuming. And a few years later, he happens to be transferred to Chino State in 1949. And he's still fuming about his son, Kenneth, like, can't believe he's been betrayed. And it is April 13th of that year that he actually escapes the prison.
No.
Police are immediately like, holy shit, we've got to protect Kenneth. He is going to go and kill that fucking kid. And so they rally around him, but Kenneth never hears from his father. And neither does anyone else. And no one knows what became of Arthur.
Shut after your he escaped fucking from mouth.
Prison. And that. That is the story of somebody. Some people say he went to Mexico. Some people say that Kenneth was in on it, drawing the police away so his father could escape and lead the rest of his life, but he basically only spent 20 years in prison for the most horrendous of crimes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like a story you made up.
I can't believe I've never heard of that. That is
wild.
Wild.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we talk about it. Lila, the hero?
Yeah, Lila went on to get married again and had a great life.
Good for her.
Or whatever. I don't know what happened to the neighbor, but she's my favorite of the story.
The
as
neighbor
well.
Is the best. Oh my God. I love a nosy neighbor.
So there you go. Yeah, and that's what it made me think of when I was looking at different crazy in loves this week. I was just like, I do feel like a nosy neighbor this week with the whole Jason yes. Collier scandal. And I was like, don't we all identify with yeah. Elizabeth a little much? Was like, we need an explanation right
Excuse
now.
Me. I think you owe the neighborhood an explanation.
She carried his ass so hard.
That is how I feel about Jason Collier. Like, I'm so annoyed that we're probably not going to get any kind of public statement from him. Because I'm like, I'm sorry. You owe
the public us.
An explanation as to what the hell was going on here.
We're all so invested. We're only hearing one side. I'm like, I want to hear Opal's side. I want to hear Jason's
I want to hear from
side.
Opal.
I want the Netflix doc. I want all of it. So
I think it's going to be a Lifetime.
Oh,
if anything.
Even better. Even better.
Who would play yeah. him in the Lifetime movie?
There's actually a poll in one of the groups that I was in.
Jason
Priestley. Somebody put Penn Badgley. from you.
Oh God, no. Oh no.
No.
He's too good looking.
Yeah. That's why
true.
I said Jason Priestley. I think it's perfect.
Oh God.
I stand by my answer.
Well, what are you guys watching this week?
Well, my like week has been eaten up with homework and school, which I'm so thankful for because it has kept me from just binging the shit out of television. So really the only thing I've done is my typical ER at night, but I did watch our friend Sarah Tomko, her
Resident
show.
Resident Alien.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's super cute. I recommend it. I didn't realize like she's like 50% of the show, like honestly.
She's the main character. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And her and Alan Tudyk have such great chemistry. It's super good. I was really, really excited. I thought it was really great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect timing too. You know what I mean? Like it's light.
Yeah, it's super light. I enjoy like sci-fi original shows for the most part for that reason alone is that they tend to be super light. But they have really interesting, unique storylines. So
yeah,
yeah. I watched No One Set No One Saw a Thing, which is on Sundance, which is a 6-part documentary series on the Sundance Channel about a town in Missouri called Skidmore. And the fact that the whole town got together in a meeting and decided to murder the town bully. Jesus.
What and did this motherfucker do?
That's what I'm saying. Because I'm like, how shitty of a human being do you have to be that an entire town is like, you know what? We can't take it anymore.
Well, oof. Not only that, that happened in 81. And then since then, what this doc series theorizes is that the effect that that had, because they've never been able to find out who actually killed the town bully. Everyone's pressed, and there were like 60 people that witnessed this murder, and everyone's like, nope, I didn't see anything or whatever.
Wow.
So they theorize the effect that that's had on the town, because the murder rate and the crazy shit that's happened in the town since then has been so extreme that they're like, really? This must have been the catalyst. Because like, they're like, if this guy was so bad, why didn't things go back to happily ever after they murdered him?
Huh.
Like, things got progressively worse. And so, like, I know you guys are aware of Bobby Jo Stinnett.
Yeah.
The Lisa Brooklyn. Montgomery coming and cutting her baby out of her happened in Skidmore, Missouri.
Mm. Oh, like, I don't know. Okay, never mind. Yes.
All these fucking crazy crimes happened in Skidmore, Missouri after that killing. And like, everyone's like, I didn't see anything. I didn't notice anything. And so they're like wondering like what the correlation was. It's really, really interesting.
Ain't no snitches really, really in Skidmore, clearly.
Nope. Nope.
Damn. So, it ain't just snitches that get stitches there. It's everyone.
Everybody apparently. Gets stitches in Skidmore.
Everybody gets stitches.
Stitches for all. Right.
So really, they're really putting the light skid in Skidmore. What about you, Keegan?
So I did take a Christina suggestion, and my nighttime show has been Ink Master. Man, did I forget how incredible early 2000s reality shows are. Like, wow, amazing. Al Fiction. Wow. Hate him. And that's how you know that that motherfucker is going to be on the show until like the top five, because there's always one villain and they always have to keep him on until like right before the end. They can't win, but you know they're going to stay on for as long as possible just to annoy the shit out of you. And
can we talk about how hot Dave Navarro is, though?
Look, he okay, though. Is, okay,
wait,
but.
We did this as a fuck, marry, kill, didn't we? We did Dave, the judges. Oh, no, we tried to, but I think, Keegan, you
hadn't seen
it, right?
I hadn't seen it. So I've seen it
now. We should do the judges.
I've seen it now. And here's the thing. Dave Navarro, definitely hot. However, it's so apparent that they hired that man with no credentials. Like, he even says in the beginning, he's like, I'm going to be the host and judge because I have a lot of tattoos. And it's like, he offers nothing of substance.
Nothing. He just has an opinion.
Like, whatsoever.
It's better.
It's
his technical, like, judging of their work gets so much better because he's really learning from these guys. You can tell.
Yeah, season one.
At the beginning, whoa.
Season one, it's just like, it's almost like he'll say his opinion, and then, like, the two judges who know what they're talking about will give a different opinion, and then Dave Navarro will be like, yeah, actually, that. Like, that's
we will put a pin in this because I would like to fuck, marry, kill the Ink Master judges because
they're so mean.
I have an opinion on that.
Also,
I have an opinion on that.
I have opinions too.
There's one judge who literally I don't know his name. I gotta watch it more.
Oliver,
but is it the long haired guy?
No, the long haired guy is kind of a dick, but the short haired guy never gives any positive feedback that I've seen whatsoever. Like,
listen,
he's just mean.
I have a personal story about him I will share.
Because he's from Miami.
Yes. And
he was on Miami Inc.
I worked across the street from him. I was working at a tattoo shop across the street from Miami Inc. when that show was airing. And I have a fucking
brilliant
story about him.
I can't wait.
I know shit about Kat too, because she came on to that
show. She married Oliver.
After. I know all I know T.
Okay. All right. I'm excited. We will definitely talk about that. We'll fuck, marry, kill them next episode. But the other thing that I've been watching that is just I'm loving is Last Tango in Halifax. Oh my God.
Oh my God. You were talking about
that. It's so cute. It's so cute. So it has a woman in it. She was in Happy Valley, which if you like British, you know, kind of like crime procedurals, you should watch Happy Valley because it's so good and she's so good in it. But I kept seeing it pop up and, you know, Netflix knows me. So it was using her in all of the like artwork to try and like pull me in. So I saved it to my list and then I finally started watching it. And it's basically about these two like septuagenarians who like had a missed connection when they were teenagers and then linked back up on Facebook when both of their spouses died when they were in their 70s and decided to get married. Cute. And it's like, it's like these two families trying to come together. It's so cute. And
that sounds heartwarming.
I love it. So if you're looking for heartwarming. Keegan,
I watched that that documentary you recommended. Pick of the Litter? Yes.
Did you love it?
I did. But also, I have opinions. I was just like, oh my gosh. Also, I just don't know what happens to breeding dogs.
Oh, I don't know.
They go into that. I'm like, that side-eyed me. Have the love of a family, but I was like, these are the ones that are going to come and be breed dogs, and I was like, wrong completely from the beginning.
Yeah, I agree. The one of the litter who ended up going on to be a breed dog, I was like, well, what does that mean? I don't know what that means, but the rest of the documentary, as far as just like even the one, I kept having to remind Anthony because he kept getting sad. And I was like, well, even the ones that don't go on to be guide dogs, they're going to go on to be somebody's pet who like loves them so much. And like, they're so freaking cute. Like
the Patriot story was really
beautiful.
Cute.
Oh, my God.
Dog.
So I haven't watched this documentary, but when I used to work for this company called Unite, there is a company. And it's called something to soldier to something. I can't remember off the top of my head. It's going to drive me crazy. But it's like a shelter to soldier. That's what it is. So they take shelter dogs, like German Shepherd or something, who's got like a few years on them, just a couple years old. Then they can train them to be. Not like
support dogs, emotional support dogs,
Support dogs, dude. It is so they're basically like saving two lives at once. It is the most fucking heartwarming shit.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of what happened in that documentary. The one that we're talking about is because it had been a vet who had PTSD, who had been training this dog, had to give him up to go to another trainer. And then at the end, they were like, hey, he can't go on to be a seeing eye dog, but if you want him back, you can have him back. And so he took him back. Aww. And he's like, he's my best friend. And I'm like, oh my God.
Dying. It was so good. So yeah, if you need something heartwarming, check that out. Cause it definitely was really, really got me in all the feels. But yeah, if you guys have stories to share, if you have things that we should watch, anything like that, go to our one-stop shop website. It's myworstdatepodcast.com. And we love you guys so much.
Cheers.
Hey, Worsties, check out this podcast, Sex Talk with My Mom. We think that you will love it. It is filled with frank discussions about sex, and Cameron and Karen are hilarious. So check out their preview, and we hope you check out their podcast anywhere you listen. Cheers.
It's uncomfortable to talk about sex, but sometimes it's important to get uncomfortable. Sex Talk with My Mom is the best mom-son podcast about sex.
It is the only one as well.
My mother is a cougar.
My son is a clown.
In a nutshell, my dad died, so my mother decided to create a YouTube channel all about sex, like all mothers do.
And then my son decides to use my material in his stand-up comedy routines.
And thus, Sex Talk with My Mom was born. Each week we interview comedians.
She starts sucking my dick, and I'm like, whoa, I guess pornos are real.
We also talk to sex experts.
I could bottom in a really dominant way. I can be like, bitch, pick up that flogger and hit me with it now.
And we also talk to our ex-lovers.
I was not that experienced with fingering. So we start...
Not that experienced?
I wasn't that experienced. I'm picking up from like what I've seen on porn,
he
which
was
is...
hovering. He was hoverboarding it.
We've been featured in Esquire magazine, on the Today Show,
at Second City in Chicago.
Subscribe to Sex Talk with My Mom.